College Council Meeting, October 29th, 2019.
Start the meeting and any action, we can't take any action obviously until we have a quorum. So I'll call the meeting to order. What we can do maybe is we can approve the minutes. There's any new business anyone's aware of. And the old business, the only thing we have, I think the recommendation to name President Kennedy emeritus. That has been signed and will be forwarded to the chancellor and the board today, hopefully. All right? I hope that all works out. I do not have anything to report other than the reappointments of the college council. I was thinking this morning, it's kind of like a couple that have dated like for 10 years, and every time they go out together, the female keeps thinking he's going to propose, and it never happens. So nothing has happened. So maybe we'll move right into the president's report to save time. Thank you.
Okay. And so let me apologize for a couple of people who couldn't be here today. Okay, one is Tracy Thompson, from our new vice president for advancement. So she sent me a report. And the other is Courtney Bish, who is at a conference. And she sent me a report. And so I'll be delivering some of their comments as well. And so, well, it seems to me that we just met a couple of weeks ago here. And so you'd think that there wasn't a whole lot that's new, but of course, everything keeps happening. And so let me give you some updates. Let me start, I guess, get the bad news out of the way first. Okay, and that is that unfortunately, Canton was not chosen as the North Country's Downtown Revitalization Initiative winner. Potsdam was. And so while we're disappointed that Canton didn't win, we're of course happy for our colleagues over in Potsdam. And with respect to our downtown project, we're pursuing alternate funding opportunities with the United States Economic Development Administration and also trying to get close to the governor's office. And so Lenore will probably be sending a couple of words about that later on in this presentation. But anyway, so it's a small setback, but we're still in on the consolidated funding applications, and so we'll just be going for other funding opportunities. There was just a SUNY president's meeting last week, so I thought I'd share with you some of the topics that were brought up there that may be of interest. Not surprisingly, there's a focus on reducing operating costs in SUNY right now and trying to do more things consortially by forming procurement hubs, again, trying to bring down costs because, you know, the amount of money that the SUNY system gets is pretty flat from the state, but costs keep going up. And so consequently, we have to do more with less. There's a push to make sure that all campuses are compliant with NIST and cybersecurity standards, okay, by the year 2022. And we're actually in a good place with that already. We are involved and we're a member of a consortium that deals with that. Overall in SUNY, while our campus is up a little bit in terms of overall student enrollment, SUNY is down, okay, by 6,000 students this year in enrollment. And the overall enrollment has fallen from 471,000 students in 2010 to 417,000 this year. And so that's a difference of $54,000, if I did my math right. 54,000 students, rather.
Students,
yeah. Most of the drop comes at the community colleges, which I think a lot of people have heard are down in enrollment. They've fallen from 249,000 back in 2010 to 194,000 right now. And so, needless to say, SUNY is interested in a number of growth initiatives. Okay, and they're working on those, one of which is the SUNY Online growth initiative, and Peggy will be talking about that in a little while. Another thing that's happening is that there's a big emphasis these days on student health and wellness. And, you know, this is kind of interesting. I mean, I was, I've been, you know, obviously we're in contact with the big hospitals up here and so forth, and they're very interested and concerned about, you know, the state of rural health, okay, both in the region and nationally. And you may have seen, you know, some articles on this subject, right, because, you know, this is kind of a big issue everywhere. And, you know, most of SUNY's campuses are in rural areas. And so that's something that affects them. And so this will be a rather interesting, I think, task force to be on. We've got two people here at SUNY Canton who are on it, Courtney Bish and Peggy DeCook. And so we are well represented. And so I'm interested in seeing what happens as a result. And something else that was reported on, okay, were a couple of legal cases that impact higher education. And so one came out of a sexual assault case at Plattsburgh, okay, and the other came out of a hazing incident at University of Buffalo. Okay, and the good news from our perspective is that the courts sided with SUNY in both cases, arguing that what the campuses did was appropriate. Okay, because a lot of times people make, shall we say, interesting arguments as to why they're not guilty. And so in the sexual assault case, the person who was accused basically said, well, the victim had opportunities to disengage with me and didn't. Okay, therefore, how can I be guilty? And the court, in effect, said that the standard is, no, you have to get positive consent. Okay, silence is not consent. And so I think that's an important distinction, and it's one that we need to make sure that students are aware of. Okay, because, you know, a lot of times, unfortunately, teenagers think if the partner says nothing, then that means it's okay. Okay, and it's not. Okay, the hazing situation was an argument about whether a lawyer needed to be present and actively participating for it to be a fair trial, so to speak. And so most SUNY colleges, ourselves included, allow for a lawyer to be present, okay, and to, you know, pass notes and so forth with the person who's accused, or doing the accusing, I guess, okay, but they can't actively participate in the process because it's not a trial, okay? And so this went to court. The person argued that they didn't get due process, okay, because their lawyer could not actively participate. The court ruled this was not a requirement, that their presence was sufficient, and that you also didn't have to have witnesses present. Okay, they're allowing a person to give a deposition was sufficient, okay, to meet the standards of due process. And so those were two relatively important cases, okay, that, you know, we need to obviously keep scanning the horizon on these things to make sure that we're fully compliant with the law in such cases. And so these are two that went SUNY's way. There's a push to upgrade emergency response policies. And so we're looking at ours to make sure that everybody is signed up for RAVE and to make sure that all our classrooms and buildings have adequate protection. So this is something we're always taking this stand on. Okay, because obviously this is on a lot of people's minds these days. there was a guest speaker at the meeting from the United States Department of Justice who was talking about substance abuse and its effect on student success and on retention. A rather surprising statistic that he mentioned was that 64% of students who left college did so because of substance abuse or mental health issues. Frankly, that seems high to me. Okay, but that's the statistic that they're putting forward. And so, obviously, issues of mental health and of substance abuse are things, again, that we'll need to keep our eyes open about. And it's well known that students are coming to college more fragile than in the past. That's actually a good thing, okay, from my perspective, because it means that students who in the past wouldn't have had the opportunity to get a higher education now are, and colleges are working to make sure that their needs are being met. That's a good thing. But of course, it's also a challenge. substance abuse part of the campus. Tell students what the risks of dangerous behavior are, and obviously our police force and our student, the folks who deal with behavior, student behavior folks, obviously uphold the law. And, try to have learning opportunities for students about these issues so that they'll know not only is it against the law, but it's bad for your health and bad for your future. And so, we're four square with them on that. We've been having some good results in our meeting with folks from the SUNY Construction Fund about our facilities, both what we're doing in the present and what we hope to do in the future. So, Sean, would you like to talk a little about that? And anything else that you're seeing on the fiscal front?
Sure. So, as everybody has probably seen, we've talked about it before a little bit, Dana Hall Rehab, we did the demolition infrastructure upgrade. So that was our phase one, and then phase two, renovations to Dana Hall. So we were lucky enough to get the funding to go ahead and bid that project for the interior of Dana Hall. What that meant for us is, we had $8 million of funding to bid that. Bid climate was good. We came in $812,000 under estimated bid. Mm-hmm. So that's great, 10%. Mm-hmm. And bid range was had a variance of $1.2 million. So I think construction companies are hungry, and I think everybody was pretty serious about wanting the job. So I think that's great for us. We hope to start soon. The bids were in October 1st. They have not been actually awarded yet. That will be happening soon, and we'll be moving forward with that. So that's our biggest project that's happening here on the campus right now. We're still cleaning up some of the odds and ends at Cheney. We've got some small local projects happening. French Hall, we're finishing up. We're getting the furniture ordered for that. Peggy and Molly are working on some furniture and renovations for Miller Campus Center to try to spruce it up a bit, a few things like that. So those are small projects that we're working at, but just keep plugging away with it, with Dana Hall being our major one for now. As far as the budget, I was just looking at some of the stuff. I had prepared some data for EC a couple of weeks ago, and I thought it was very interesting. One of the things that people should understand is when we talk about our total budget, so in 16-17, our total budget was just under $26 million all told. 17-18, just under around $25.5 million. Last year, $27.7 million, and that had to do with the salary and the retro salary increases. This year, we're at 27 right now. I expect that to actually go up a little bit. But the piece that I thought was really interesting was we did some of the percentages on what PSR and PIM service are as part of our total budget. So it was interesting to me that when you added PSR, which is your payroll and your temp service, together, you ended up with, in 16-17, 88% of the budget. In 17-18, 87% of the budget. 18-19, 88% of the budget. And this year, of course, we won't know our temp service exact numbers until the end of the year, but right now we're budgeted at 87% of the budget. But again, when you think about that, and you think about budgets that are fairly flat, and your utilities run 6-7% of your budget, there's not very much room for other things, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's just interesting that people should understand that we argue over maybe 5% of a budget, really.
Yeah.
The people get all, when most of it is contractual, most of it has already been decided, when we go into it. So I think we've done a really good job when you think about the percentage of total budget. And I don't know when you listen to Zvi and he talks about each time there seems to be another state mandate.
Yes.
And so, all of these positions and all of this work that needs to get done, and we're still trying to, hold as flat as we can and get these things done for the state. And it's a lot. It's a lot. When we talk about mental health for our students, when We talk about the extra services that we try to provide. We talk about the tutoring services that we try to expand on as much as we can. It's a lot to try to hold that percentage so you can still keep your head above water. And I think that's just important for people to know.
And, you know, again, I think it's important to point out, you know, just how much hard work people on campus put towards these areas, you know. I was mentioning the Health and Wellness Task Force, and that Courtney and Peggy are on this. And, of course, they don't have anything else to do in their jobs, okay, because, you know, they just sit there twiddling their thumbs all day. And so, obviously, you know, participating in this takes time. And it takes effort, and it's not like they get a raise for doing it, and it's not like they can drop some other activity because they're doing it. And so, similarly, you know, when the costs go up, we have to find a way to absorb them. So we have to become more efficient in some other areas, which doesn't mean that there was fat that deserved to be cut, but rather that means we have to make strategic decisions about what we can't do anymore, as well as what we must maintain in order to support our students, which is why we have to constantly evaluate what we're doing to make sure we're getting the outcomes that we want, okay, and so that we can make those decisions in an informed way.
With regard to the flat funding, do you see any relief at all on a state level or what normally happens?
There's an old expression about this, Joe, which is that the state of New York will always do what's right after it's tried everything else.
Yeah, right.
And you know, it's an old joke, but you know, the sad truth is that you know, the funding has been flat. They're being a little bit more flexible, I think, on capital spending now than they were, say, 2 or 3 years ago. It's not a huge difference, but there's a little progress there, I think it would be fair to say. And but with regard to basic funding, they decided that they would pay for a portion of the retro, okay, and we appreciate that, and we hope that will continue. But the ongoing cost of the salary increases, that's on us, okay, and so far as I can tell, there's no discussion, okay, about changing that. The legislature is having hearings, okay, and they've invited some campuses to participate in those hearings. And, of course, SUNY wants a kind of consolidated statement, right, so that, you know, the campuses don't disagree with each other. So they're, so, you know, they're in the middle of that right now. And the problem is that when it comes to funding, the legislature is 100% on our side until it becomes time to cut something else in order to actually have the money to do this, whereupon the 100% evaporates very quickly. Mm-hmm. And again, you can't blame them. There's all kinds of priorities in the state that are important, K-12 education usually being number one, but, you know, maintaining health care and so forth. It's not like the hospitals are feeling overfunded by the state. Right, and so they need more money in order to, you know, help people basically stay alive and stay healthy. And so there are just lots of priorities. And with a 2% tax cap, right, there's not a lot of ways to get that, okay, because, you know, the inflation rate is generally, you know, at least 2%, okay, especially for things like this. So, you know, everybody's kind of caught between the rock and the hard place. People don't want their taxes to go up. And, of course, we understand that. And so that's kind of a long-winded way of saying fiscal relief is not on the horizon.
So our success, basically, is because of the innovative spirit of the college and looking for other types of funding sources.
Yes.
And you've done a great job that way. I mean, there's not many community colleges that see a spike in enrollment. I don't know of any in the North Country, as a matter of fact.
That went up this year, and you know, we're obviously happy about that, but we're also cognizant of the fact that it could hit us, okay, next year. We're doing everything we can to prevent that by, you know, trying to be innovative in our programs, being supportive of our students, for investing our money where it matters. Okay, and I think that's a place we've done a good job.
Yes.
Something else I'll mention, and maybe Ken will want to talk about this a little bit later, but I just had a meeting with the unions yesterday. We had our every semester lunch. Yes. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that most of the conversation centered about what a good place SUNY Canton is to work, right? That people feel supported, we're very transparent, a lot of places are opaque, okay, in terms of what they do. We respect the folks in the unions, and we don't have the faculty staff divide, which you see on many campuses. And we've got a friendly relationship with our unions, because I think we all recognize we're in the same boat. And our job is to support our students and to try to move our college forward, and we all take pride in that. And so it's, you know, a college-wide effort.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, you should take pride in that.
Yeah. And speaking about trying to keep enrollment up and new programs, SUNY has just approved our new degree program in esports management.
Yeah.
Okay, and so that's good. And we're anticipating that State Ed should approve this one quickly, okay, because this one doesn't have to go to the Office of the Professions, which is the bottleneck down there. We think this will be a good enrollment program for us, given the explosive interest in esports and online gaming. On the flip side, we continue to have problems with the Office of the Professions, okay, at State Ed, with regard to our engineering technology programs. They're continuously trying to micromanage what we do and how we teach, and that's really not their job. Okay, and so we've come up with a workaround on the current program that we're proposing, which is an online Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering Technology. Our program on the campus is a Bachelor of Technology in that. And so I've brought this to SUNY's attention, and we'll see what happens there. And we're not the only ones who are experiencing difficulties with the Office of the Professions, and SUNY has approached us and has got a little team that's working on dealing with this issue. And so, also, our work with SUNY Online continues to be challenging, but our own program is going forward and it's going well. And we're preparing for the programs that we're going to launch this coming year, as well as making suggestions to SUNY about potential issues and how we think they could be best addressed. And so, Peggy, would you like to talk about what's happening there, as well as other things that are happening or being planned in academic affairs?
Sure. I agree. SUNY Online continues to be a challenge. We have used that metaphor or analogy, excuse me, many times in building the plane as we fly it. In working with SUNY, and I think one of the big challenges that we would likely build the component parts in a different order than SUNY would. So it's that constant yin-yang, give and take to get this done. Our online courses are running well, and we are working closely with the SUNY team to build the system program and to help troubleshoot issues as they occur. Next week, we're sending a team to Albany. We'll be leaving on Sunday for meetings on Friday, and these meetings will focus on the budget model. So President Safran, CFO Miller, Associate Provost Mott, and I will be going. As you know, the campus submitted a white paper outlining an equitable budget model last month, and this will be the focus of our campus presentation. And hopefully by the time we return, we'll have some clarity on how SUNY will handle this, as well as the fee structure that's associated with the classes. Recruiting for next term has begun. This would be one of the component parts we feel is a little bit off time, and that in the best of all possible worlds, it would have begun earlier than this. Coaches are trained, they're serving as admissions counselors, and we've participated in discussions that have been geared towards refining the messages that the coaches provide to communicate about the programs with prospective students. And our goal has been to really emphasize the distinctiveness of the different programs, as well as to emphasize the services that we provide. Our HM healthcare management program seemingly is enrolling well. As of this morning, we have 18 students who are enrolled in the online program through SUNY, as in comparison to one from Alfred. I'm so sorry for Alfred. there is a great deal of interest in our coming cybersecurity program, which will come online next fall, hopefully with our crime analysis program. OSV also asked me to update everybody about Root Success. We continue to develop the functionality of Root Success. This is a system that has replaced our engaged, non-engaged process, and instructors can essentially raise a warning flag on a student who's experiencing difficulty, and it can be difficulty of any kind, a variety of different academic problems, as well as behavioral issues, things like that. The goal is to ensure that the student is offered assistance from those who are in the best position to provide it. As we move into the current advising period, faculty are now discovering how Root Success can assist in this process. So through Root Success, faculty can get an overview of all of their advisees that will indicate their registration date, any holds on their accounts that need to be taken care of before they can register, programs that they're part of here on campus, such as EOP or TRIO, if their FAFSA has been filed, if they're living on campus, if they're part of the academic recovery program, and so on. Faculty advisors can also, through this program, access a summary of any flags that have been raised on a student, as well as the outcomes of those outreach efforts to provide an overall sense of how well the student is doing. We can look at whether students have logged into any of the tutoring labs or have had appointments with other offices. And this system can also be used to schedule advising appointments. So it seems that it will greatly facilitate the process. So basically, it's really a very robust system that is geared towards student success, and implementation is going well. In terms of what I've been doing since the last meeting, I'm still in the process of getting to know individual programs on campus. I have been within SUNY for a long time, but the suite of programs that are offered at Canton are different in nature from what I've experienced. So I've been going around and meeting individually with the different programs on campus to get to know the faculty better, get to know the program better, as well as the issues that are percolating up for them, feeling that that understanding can help me to best advocate for them. We are also engaging in a new cycle of training efforts with faculty. Our first foray is going to be a promotion and tenure workshop that will be offered to faculty within the first 5 to 6 years of their appointment. In meeting with new faculty earlier this year, one of the things that came through is that they really didn't understand the process. And even had some basic questions concerning the nature of contracts and how those intersected. So we have a 3-hour workshop that we're providing that will start to cover these issues with them and develop a support network for them so that they can be successful in the process.
And other than that?
Well, I have a question. I noticed that Paul Smith was rolling out an esports version of a program.
Yes.
Please comment on that.
Yes. One of the less enjoyable elements of life is that you get little surprises that pop up in the press that you didn't otherwise know about. And obviously, we've had a lot of success with our esports effort, okay? And other colleges notice, and then they start to say, you know, we should be doing that too. And so in this particular case, I've not talked to anybody at Paul Smith's about this, but from reading things in the newspaper, Paul Smith's got, I think, a $100,000 grant from Stewart's, okay, which they must have some connection with, because Stewart's is regularly donated to them in ways that it doesn't donate to other places. There must be a family connection of some sort. Mm. Okay, anyway, so that's fine. And so up until then, they've had kind of, I think, a small esports, just as, you know, fun activity sort of thing, on campus program, and they are members of the ECAC, okay, in terms of esports. I don't think they've competed yet, okay, but they're obviously planning to. And so then that brings up the issue of the Empire State Games, which, they are listed as hosting, okay? That's something that we were actually approached about, and we're trying to kind of get to the bottom of what happened here, in that we've been working with the North Country Regional Economic Development Council on this, and they were working with the Empire State Games and pulled back, because Empire State Games, as best I understand it, and please take this with a grain of salt, okay, because I'm not sure about the details here. They seem to have pulled back because there was not the proper connection with the esports governing body, and also about how it might be broadcast to the public. Okay, and so I'm working with the NCREDC right now to try to basically find out what happened and to see if we can resume our rightful place in it.
I would suspect, too, that Paul Smith is in such dire straits that if a lot of people wanted to give him a break, let's face it, they felt we could stand that blow, but
perhaps
Paul Smith really needed something.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's also no question but that Paul Smith is the closest in just physical distance to Lake Placid. And so that may have something to do with this as well. Okay, but, you know, given that this is going to be something that will have kind of broader attention, and that they still, I don't think, by December, will have been able to complete any facilities or to have fully geared up, it's also a very big risk that this can just not go as well as they hope. And so so we're seeing what's going on and what role we might play, perhaps, to help. Okay, and we'll see what happens.
The victims of this, most sincerest form of flattery, right?
Yes.
Everyone wants to be like us, so in terms of esports.
Yeah, and in fact, we get, you know, lots of inquiries from other places, and we're always more than willing to help them. Okay, we know this isn't something that we can keep exclusively for ourselves, and, you know, we want to encourage people to do it right, okay, in the way that we've done it. And to, and to, in effect, play fair. And so we've been very cooperative with lots of other campuses, not just in SUNY, but elsewhere in the United States and even internationally, okay, about this. And so we're very much recognized as a national leader in this.
Very impressive because, you start mentioning some of the bigger universities that you've played against, and you've done very well competing with them. That really wakens everybody as to how successful SUNY Canton is.
Well, in fact, let me then segue to what Courtney would have said to you, okay, because she sent me some notes, because this ties in nicely here. We were the featured college at the first ever Extreme Networks Esports Summit, okay, which was held in Syracuse a few weeks ago. And I remember seeing something in the news about that. I don't know if any of you saw it, right? But it basically had the headline, Syracuse University considering esports, SUNY Canton leads the way.
Right here, that's pretty close.
And so it was pretty good, in terms of our athletics program. You don't often see that with regard to us and Syracuse University. Okay, but anyway, Molly and Kyle and Randy and Travis and Greg and Charlie and Courtney attended, this summit and presented along with many students from our esports team, and we continue to pioneer new ways to engage online students and women in esports, and we look to share potential, you know, new initiatives soon. So we're piloting a new esports living learning community, okay, in our residence halls this fall semester, which will feature decor and furnishings to match those of the esports arena in Neveldine. And the other nice thing that's happening, I'll get back to esports again in a minute, is that, you know, Courtney was on the road at the end of last week for something kind of nice, which is that we won a SUNY award for the Outstanding Student Affairs Program.
Whoa.
We've never gotten one before.
That's great.
Right, and this is for our online engagement project. Mm-hmm. And so they had 70 different nominations, and we were one of 10 winners SUNY-wide. Okay, so this was obviously terrific. We've got 20 new students working now on a leadership badge this semester, in addition to the nearly 300 students who started this badge or the cultural competency badge last year. And so this is another way we're enhancing what we offer students, and it's at no additional cost. Okay, I'm actually giving a talk tonight. Okay, as part of this, at 7 o'clock in Student Center 212-214, about the stolen generations of children in Australia, and showing the movie Rabbit Proof Fence, which is about that. And this is about a government policy that they had in the early part of the last century, where they would take mixed-race children from Aboriginal families and take them away from those families, moved them more than 1,000 miles away to be educated to become, if they were boys, agricultural workers, or girls to be domestic workers, okay, and trying to integrate them into a more European lifestyle so that they would fit into Australian society. Needless to say, their parents did not like this, okay, and so this is the true story of two young girls who this happened to and who escaped. And all they knew was that their home was somewhere along the rabbit-proof fence that divides Western Australia into two halves. And so they were off and the police were chasing them, and that's what happened next.
Canada did the same thing, didn't they?
Yes,
the United
did.
States also had residential
yes,
schools.
Yes, they did.
Yes. The and last one closed in Canada in 1997.
That's right. And that's part of the talk I'm giving. It, the last slide is this isn't just Australia, right? This happened, as Barrett said, in Canada and until very, very recently, okay, in the United States. And there were even worse forms of it, for example, in Nazi Germany, which in occupied countries tried to take children who they viewed as having Aryan characteristics, murdered their parents, took the children, and raised them as Germans.
Mm-hmm. I actually took statements from survivors for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in Canada.
Yeah.
I did that
the Canadian government has yet to apologize.
Yes, we did.
You came that close, but not.
No, they did. They issued an apology and reparations.
Oh, they did?
Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
They did.
And there are publications that with the
I didn't think they were official.
Mm-hmm.
Surprises.
No,
well,
the United States hasn't.
I should mention Australia.
Yeah, right.
Okay, the Prime Minister and Parliament apologized, right? And I'll be showing the proclamation of the apology. And they even had a National Sorry Day, okay, that more than 1 million people participated in Australia. And Australia is not a big place, so, you know, 1 million people is a lot.
What does the reparations look like? Would they size it?
I'm not 100% sure on how those were exactly given,
Was it significant, do you think?
I think the total lump sum was significant. The way that those were distributed, I'm not sure were always effective or how much each individual person got, but I know that
But reparations doesn't have to be just money. It could be
yes.
The infrastructure of the society being reworked.
Right.
That's a big part
of
it.
Yeah, it is.
All
right. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're working on that in Australia. Reparations per se are not on the table, but...
Mm.
Restructuring society to make things better is.
Mm.
So we'll see how that. And that's been an ongoing effort. So anyway, the reason Courtney can't be here right now is that she's in Albany right now to present with the Associate Provost for Student Affairs and University Life, John Graham, on the work that we've done with our Food Insecurity Task Force. And so that's yet another thing that we're involved in. You know, when people think about college students, they usually don't think that they may not know where their next meal is coming from, but that is an issue. And so we have a food pantry on campus. You all know about the clothing drive that we do annually, and there are many other things of this nature where we try to help our students, and it's important. Okay, going back to the e-sports, I got some statistics from Randy. Okay, it still is gaining a lot of media attention. You just heard about the Syracuse thing. 118 new students have tried out for our esports teams this year, and we've now expanded to 8 games, and nearly 100 students are on the teams. And so we've got 24 esports computer stations in our arena, and so you can do the math yourself. More than 100 players, 24 stations, we've got a little bit of a crunch, okay? And so we're looking at adding more gaming computers at a second location on campus. And, of course, our facilities area is doing yeoman work in helping us figure this out. Okay, the fall sports season is winding down. Soccer playoffs begin this weekend. Volleyball playoffs begin in 2 weeks. Winter sports practices have begun. Men's and women's hockey start their seasons with away games this weekend. And, of course, you know that kind of the big thing in hockey isn't even our own hockey, but is that St. Lawrence University's arena, Appleton Arena, is still undergoing renovation, so they're playing their games here. And we've coordinated with them and done everything we can to help them. They are very appreciative of what we've done. And, again, this is additional work for our buildings and grounds people, right, and for our athletics people, but they step up to the challenge because it's only right to help out our colleagues in their time of need, and they've done this for us in the past, and that's the way it's supposed to be.
Just a quick question on that. How does the ticket sale go on that? I mean, how does one get a ticket? Is it through St. Lawrence or through us?
Through St. Lawrence, and in some cases the answer is you can't actually get a ticket, okay, because our arena capacity is obviously smaller than Appleton's, and consequently, especially for the bigger games, you know, they've got a certain number of season's ticket holders, and so the number of actual free tickets to be purchased, I mean, none of them are free.
Right, right.
You know, and the number of available tickets is rather small. Right. The Clarkson game is not going to be held here, okay, because obviously that's the highest demand game of all, okay, and there would have probably been a riot on the St. Lawrence campus if they couldn't somehow have more tickets available for that. I suggest that they play each game twice. For some reason, they didn't listen. And so
that didn't go over.
Yeah, that didn't go over. But
first half ticket, second half ticket.
Anyway, but they're really appreciative of what we've done. Okay, and we've done a lot. And so this is, I think, a good thing. Our vice president for advancement couldn't be with us today because she's closing on the sale of her house today, and that was kind of important.
Yes.
Okay, but she did give me an update, which I'd like to share with you. Okay, first, and some of you were there for this, we had a wonderful scholarship luncheon on the 26th of September. More than 300 donors and students were there in the audience, and this is a very important event, of course, where we celebrate the philanthropy of our generous supporters and give our students a chance to meet them. And so everybody in the foundation office played a role in making this a big success. This was followed by the foundation's fall board meeting. And the board approved somebody that none of you have ever heard of, okay, as a new board member, and that's Keith Rosser. Okay, so Keith is, he left us, you remember, and went over to Clarkson. Okay, but he still loves SUNY Canton, he loves our foundation, he loves our students, and he wants to be a board. And so we were very happy to welcome him back in that capacity. So I was obviously kidding when I said none of you will know him, because I think you all know about him.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Karen Spellacy continues to be as board chair, and the foundation staff was there, and this gave an opportunity for board members to meet the foundation's newest staff members as well. The audit for 2019 is complete, and the books are closed, and there are two recommendations from the auditor, which we will streamline to improve our month and year-end closing processes. The new software package is Razor's Edge, and there's a related financial piece of that, which is called Financial Edge, and they're moving to purchase and implement that, which will make them more efficient in identifying new prospects, cultivating and stewarding existing donors, monitoring annual giving, engaging more alumni, and basically increasing the amount of money raised. And several successful alumni outreach events have been held, including a catamaran cruise on Lake Erie. I'm sorry, I didn't go to that one. That sounds cool. Okay, that was hosted by Steve Savage, class of 93, and Todd Pacer, class of 87. And that drew 26 attendees, which is the highest participation in Buffalo in some time.
Pretty good.
Okay, in Rochester, they had a happy hour at Murphy's Law, right, which is an interesting name for a place. Right, 37 alumni and guests there. And there were also similar events at Shaughnessy's in Syracuse and at the Racket River Club in Colton. And so 8 events so far this fiscal year, more than 500 alumni present in total. And the fall appeal is about to go out to 6,000 alumni. And so far this fiscal year, we've raised $304,000 in gifts and pledges. And of this total, $78,000 is for the Canton Fund. And we're working closely with the gift officers, and they've submitted 40 solicitations with asks totaling $4 million. Okay, and of these, $1.5 million is planned gift solicitations, $1.1 million would be for scholarships or other endowed funds, and $750,000 would be for restricted funds, like the Steel Bridge Competition. And the remainder would be for the unrestricted. And so these solicitations should be taking place between now and February, 17 different states. We will be doing outreach to meet with alumni who also live and work in those same areas. Mm. Okay, and they're building out the plan for March through June and mapping out their prospects and so forth for business for the rest of the year. And that is Tracy's report. Mm. And so that brings us then to Lenore. And if you could give us a little more background on our ongoing efforts on the Plaza Project, as well as other work you're doing in government relations and in the community.
Sure thing. So as Bea mentioned, we will not be getting any funds from the Downtown Revitalization Initiative, but I think there are some really neat projects in Potsdam that will do some great things for that downtown, so that's very exciting. We are a priority project for the CFA, for the CFA round, which means that we received a perfect score from our regional economic development council that heads to Albany for the other 80% of the scoring and judging, which happens through the governor's office. Typically, priority projects do receive at least some of the requested funding, so we're very hopeful, and we think it is a truly transformational project that should be high on their list of funding priorities. Not wanting to depend solely on the governor's office, we're also looking to the federal government because they're always ready to help. there's a wonderful program for economic development funding through the Economic Development Association. I had the privilege of meeting some of the folks from that organization, including the chief operating officer at a conference I was recently at. So made some really good contacts there. We have a phone call tomorrow with the regional representative for that organization to kind of introduce our project, get some feedback on some preliminary numbers and ideas, and so we'll be moving forward post-haste with that. Another economic development project the college is working on is a partnership with Buffalo for the Center for Entrepreneurial Leadership, which helps small and medium-sized established businesses work on strategic growth and transition. We've got an inaugural cohort of 9 participants from St. Lawrence County. And so the programming is coming from the University of Buffalo with some supplements from our region. We're introducing local mentors and reactors to the participants to get feedback on their business and strategically moving forward. And what we hope to do is use this pilot project as a means to market this program throughout SUNY and beyond, because it's worked really well in an urban area, and now we want to adapt it for a more rural area like ours and use that as a model for entrepreneurship and economic growth. So that's getting some really good attention from folks. I think the participants are really enjoying it, and it's going really well so far. Also, in terms of the Entrepreneurship Center and the Jubilee Plaza project, I think Steve and I are going to be going on a speaking tour. I think we might be done with listening on this one. So we'll be making appointments with ESD, the governor's office, our elected officials, and SUNY to try to get as much support in the upcoming budget as we possibly can, given the limitations of being in the minority party in both houses. That's a little difficult, but we will be hitting that hard. And we do have tremendous support from those elected officials at the local level, at the state level. Assemblyman Walczyk and Senator Ritchie are very much on board with this project. And also at the federal level, we're finding a great deal of support. So, we're moving onward and upward with that. We're hoping that within a few years there will be a beautiful new development downtown that will include a comprehensive entrepreneurship center that SUNY can offer our students and the community.
Mm-hmm. And so that's been our goal for several years, as you're aware, and we've made the commitment to. Because we really don't have a choice in this, not spend college money on this, okay, but rather to raise the funds from the outside for its construction and its operation, and we're making some headway in doing that. And so that's good news. Not as good as we had hoped. We had hoped to get both major grants, but you know, one of them is actually quite good. So Barrett, will you give us an update on the SUNY Faculty Senate?
Sure. Most of the larger topics have already been addressed today. So SUNY Online, obviously, is one that faculty are concerned about, including how we maintain control of the curriculum, but also that funding model is a concern, just knowing how campuses are contributing to this project. I don't know that enough recognition was given to the campuses that are actually putting students into this program currently. So just making sure that we get our face in front of the chancellor and remind her, you know, that these, you know, campuses have been heavily invested in this, and hopefully we're going to see some return on that investment. Specifically, they did mention that rural revitalization was a topic they might want to pursue as some kind of degree program, so I think there's definitely opportunity there for us to get involved, specifically because we're already doing a lot of that work here. So I thought if you hadn't heard that yet, that was something she specifically mentioned in her discussion to us. Chair Tisch was there, and I decided to shoot my shot, and I asked her the question about whether or not she knew all the things that Canton had been doing in terms of trying to enrich student life for those online students, and she said she had not seen any of that information, but she gave me an email, so I asked Molly to forward a summary of all those activities, including the award that was won, and I sent it to Chair Tisch, and also the Chancellor. So hopefully there's some reminder of all the excellent things that we're doing here. As a result of SUNY Online, some things have been put on the back burner. For example, Gen Ed is still to be addressed in terms of what we're doing to update the current SUNY 10 to be continued. Of course, mental health and wellness. Transfer Path, that's another one that's of concern, where both Peggy and I are representatives for the Transfer Path. I'm not sure what we're calling that, workforce or work group? Anyway, they're looking at the transfer paths to see if they're working, and so we are supposedly meeting in the next couple weeks. I can't remember the date. Equity, inclusion, and diversity was a big topic, and trying to make sure the campuses are doing everything that they can, including that they have committees for this, and they, you know, we would like to see them as governance committees, people who are elected from our bodies, and that there's some kind of connection to the larger Senate in, committee as well, so that we are all on the same page in terms of the initiatives. We continue as a sector to press the chancellor on the budget. Since the numbers are not widely available, we roughly estimated how much each campus is getting on a per student basis, and Canton is in the bottom three, and you know, Potsdam, for example, is like number eight. So we asked a specific question about that, and she said, yes, we understand, it's been a long time since that's been addressed. We will not take money from one campus to give to another, so we will not be doing anything about those allocations until there's more money. we did not like that response, obviously,
right,
but
right.
Those are some of the things that, as a sector, we're trying to press the chancellor on. And that's about it. If you have questions, happy to take them.
So the SUNY Online can affect the professors in a negative way. Is that what I'm getting?
Well, currently, it's like an overload for a faculty member. They want full-time faculty to be teaching in this program, but we have our obligations to our campus. And so, for example, in order for me to teach a course in the SUNY Online model, I would have to do that as an overload to my regular teaching load. We obviously don't like that very much, and that's to be continued on how that's going to look moving forward, but that's how the pilot has rolled out.
I think there's also some concerns about purview over the curriculum, and a lot of this is tied up with the budget model that SUNY eventually adopts, and uncertainty regarding that, but depending upon how they decide to structure the offerings, if it's a faculty member with a very large section taught by adjuncts, what happens to the curriculum, who owns it, you know, all of these are questions that are up in the air and creating a lot of uncertainty for faculty regarding SUNY Online.
And that's part of the reason that we submitted a white paper to SUNY, right, trying to lay out what we think would be fair and equitable responses to these issues, because these issues are foreseeable, right? And so if you can foresee an issue, you should have a plan for how to deal with it before the issue actually hits.
Right.
And so, we have advocated for incentives to be built into the budget model, for example, to encourage the use of full-time faculty so this doesn't become a race to the bottom and, purely adjuncts and because we think that would be problematic in the long run. Similarly, we've advocated for ways that faculty will retain appropriate academic freedom within the program while still allowing for growth. And we've advocated for ways that campuses who aren't initially in the partnerships to be able to come in when the numbers justify it. And a way of allocating the revenues such that SUNY won't take a piece from the actual tuition, but rather will charge a fee for the costs that they incur, right? And that the tuition will be split equitably among the participants based on the number of students they provide, the faculty who are teaching, and other fairly obvious metrics. And again, we don't expect that SUNY will say, oh, perfect, we'll do exactly what you said, okay? But we're hopeful that this will inform their discussion and that what we'll see in the end is a budget model that bears some resemblance to what we've proposed. Will that actually happen? I would.
They have a number in their head already.
Yes.
30% back to campus.
They've talked about that.
Yeah.
And Sean and I are very, very concerned about this. Okay, because, ultimately what SUNY Online is going to want is to have the programs within it not be competed with, right, from the campuses, especially the campuses that are offering it in SUNY Online. And, you can certainly understand that, okay? But the problem is that, this is our biggest program, okay? And it plays an important part in the revenues that we get at the college, which, of course, plays an important part in being able to balance our budget, okay, and to be able to pay our faculty and staff and so forth. And so we have to watch very carefully to make sure that we wind up ahead in terms of money by participating in this. Now, the chancellor has said this will absolutely happen. She has guaranteed it, okay, to the campuses. SUNY Online has said this at every step of the way, but the devil is in the details. And so that's why Sean and I and Peggy and Molly are going down to Albany, okay, this coming week to participate in these budgetary discussions and to raise hell if they don't uphold what they've promised. Okay?
Jared Blackard's.
We're an important player in this, and our voice needs to be heard. Okay, in this, and we're adamant that it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we're responding strongly as issues come up. And we don't really have another choice. Okay, so if they want this to succeed, they need to do it in a way that supports the campuses. This is not something we can subsidize for SUNY. In fact, the opposite needs to happen. This needs to be a source of revenue for the campuses that participate. That's been their commitment, and we hold them to it.
One other piece that I think is important for you as the council to understand is when they built this, they also built it so that the community colleges teach the first 2 years. We're teaching the second 2 years. We don't have, they will not allow us to teach the first 2 years. And then if they go on for the master's program, it'll be like a university center or whatever. So when they say you can't compete against us, our program is a four-year program online. So how do we fit into that when they'll only give us year three and four? You see? So it's kind of interesting. Yeah, people don't understand it necessarily. And that also speaks to Barrett and the faculty in how the pieces of the puzzle fit together, right? And how your curriculum, is it what you really want it to be, or is it what they tell you it needs to be? So there's a lot of other little...
I didn't realize that we were... I just thought every year that we...
No, sadly that's not the case. And we've brought this up, including at the recent president's meeting, in our sector meeting, where I pointed out to them, right, and, you know, you have to say these things just very directly so that they'll get it. Okay, when you look at a community college, assuming that the program is in SUNY Online, community colleges can offer 100% of what they offer, because all they offer is years one and two, and they can do that. Okay, comprehensive colleges can offer somewhat more than 50% of what they offer, because they could do years three and four of their undergraduate programs, plus they might be able to get a graduate program in there, because some of them offer graduate programs. The colleges of technology get less than 50% of what we offer, because we can only do years three and four of our four-year programs, and we can't do anything from our two-year programs. And we have pointed out the unfairness of this, and we have included, again, a recommendation, okay, within the white paper as to how to address this, which would be to allow the four-year partners to offer one-third of the sections, okay, of the courses in the first 2 years, and to provide an opportunity for appropriately credentialed faculty from the two-year colleges to offer a course in the upper division, which would make that more attractive to them as well. We've tried to be fair and equitable while maintaining our own fiscal needs being met. And so now that's one thing I'm actually a bit optimistic about, okay, because at the president's meeting, when we had this conversation, the chancellor was there, the senior vice chancellor was there, and there were several key players. They heard us loud and clear, and what we said was not arguable. Okay, it's simple mathematics. Okay, and so I think that's a place where they're going to say yeah, because any other answer doesn't make any sense.
You know, I'm going to ask a question that's going to show how ignorant I am. Right now, we offer online courses. Now, we're talking about SUNY online courses.
Yes.
Are we prohibited from the other courses that we choose?
No.
No.
Okay. Not yet.
Not yet.
Right.
That's what I'm wondering.
No, that's the question.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, with 30% of our students.
Yeah.
Online.
Yeah.
It's a big thing.
Exactly. And again, the chancellor has committed, and she said this to me personally, so, you know, that we will be made whole on all of these things. Okay? And then they've subsequently said that, in fact, this isn't being done as charity. We expect that the campuses will be fiscally better off, okay, who participate in this. And we're going to hold them to that.
Okay.
Okay, and that's why when I hear numbers bandied about, like 30% taken off the top to SUNY, okay, and they're arguing that we'll make it up in numbers, well, let's see those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see the budget model.
Right.
Let's, Sean and me, calculate what this is going to do to our budgets. Okay, because as President Reagan said, trust but verified.
And
that's what we want to do. We want to trust but verify. Okay. So I'm expecting them to live up to their obligations. Okay, but we're going to verify that that's in fact the
case. Those higher level meetings you have with the chancellor, do any of the trustees attend those meetings at all, or
no,
never?
No. I mean, they may talk about this at trustees meetings, but you know, the meetings that we have, like president's meetings and so forth, Trustee Tisch was there, okay, but she wasn't there as in our sector meeting. She and I are pretty friendly, actually. She's a very nice woman, and so I'm hopeful
she's
that
been
she
campus,
will.
Correct.
Yes, she's been to our campus. We had a wonderful campus visit.
And did tell her about a lot of those initiatives, which is interesting that
right.
She said, no, I haven't seen anything.
Well, sometimes one says something for political reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two other trustees, Gwen Kay, who's also the president of the University Faculty Senate, and Christy, what's her last name, the new president for the Faculty Council of Community Colleges. Mm-hmm. They're trustees as well,
right.
And attend many of
Who's the trustee now for the Faculty Senate?
Gwen Kay.
Okay.
She's visiting the campus soon.
New chairman and new vice chairman, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gwen is
I just wonder if, you know, the trustees have just sat back and let the chancellor go, like happened the last time.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Do the trustees just sit there and let the chancellor run willy-nilly, like happened the last time with Nancy?
Well, again, at the president's meeting, there are just, you know, a couple of trustees who are there. Not,
yeah.
They're not fulfilling any specific role at the meeting other than to attend. Okay, and so, you know, so it's the chancellor's and the, you know, SUNY Central Office's program. And, you know, what happens at the trustees' meetings, I don't know.
I'm not saying that the chancellor is not doing the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the chancellor is cognizant of all of these issues, and we'll see how it ultimately comes out. Okay. Again, when I try to contact the chancellor, I generally get a very quick response, and so I think the relationship is good. And you know, these are challenging issues. Obviously, SUNY wants to cover its costs and probably wants to gain a little money as well. And if, in fact, the enrollments are what everybody hopes they will be, there will be money, okay, that will be available to meet all of these requirements, okay? But we need to make sure, again, that we don't get the crumbs from the table, but rather we get our fair share. And, you know, the other issue, and you heard Peggy allude to it, okay, is that in any kind of a partnership, you need to be able to rely on your partners and that they will live up to the trust that you have put in them. And we have to watch that very carefully, because sometimes people try to take advantage, mm-hmm. okay, and to not necessarily live up to the agreements that they have made 100%. Okay, and we are insistent that they do that.
Politics in there,
always. And so, so we're having a little tête-à-tête with one of our sister colleges to make sure that they stay in their lane and stay out of ours.
It is flattering that everybody likes our lane, but it gets a little crowded.
Create another lane.
No, and that's what we're constantly
doing.
But, you know, obviously we have to ensure that things that become successful for us aren't just taken and given away to others. Okay, that's why we make agreements. Okay, when other people want to enter it, we don't try to keep everything for ourselves. We couldn't sustain that, and it would be wrong to do. Okay, but when we say, okay, we're willing to have you do this piece of it, and we come to an agreement, then that piece is all they should be doing. Nothing more, nothing less. And so, you know, our view is live up to your agreements, right? You don't think that's a good agreement? Don't sign it, okay? But once you've signed it, okay, once you're in, you're in, and you have to live up to it. And so, you've heard us having issues of this sort before with other campuses, and since this happens, and we just have to, you know, be careful. All right, moving on.
I have a question, and this goes way back, and I didn't write quick enough when you were talking about it, but you had mentioned concerning enrollment, 64% of the students that had dropped out.
Yes, this is
because of substance abuse
and
mental health issues.
This is nationally.
Right. Oh, it's a national number.
Yeah, this isn't SUNY Canton.
I was going to ask about SUNY Canton specifically. Is there any numbers on SUNY Canton?
Well, we're looking into this because, again, this is obviously a concern. It's certainly true that we have more students, a higher percentage of students coming in who are, you know, using various kinds of, drugs for mental health purposes or for more general health purposes. Okay, our health offices on campus, which are number one in SUNY, I might add. Okay, you know, have a lot of work to do in working with those students and making sure that you know, the students' needs are being met, and that the students stay on their medications, and if they don't, that help is available. We work closely with the local hospitals, right, so that when a situation becomes more serious, that we can bring students to them.
So in the initial screenings, though, is it something that without, you have to be very careful, without violating some of the laws in terms of the interview process, is there anything can be done on a screening level to perhaps deal with this earlier?
The general answer is no, okay? But what we certainly do is we encourage students to let us know, okay, about what their issues are, not from the perspective of we won't accept you, okay, which we would never do.
Right, right.
But rather from the perspective of we want to know so that we can help you.
Right.
Okay, and that we can offer you, you know, every service that is possible. The law is that students have to disclose, okay, and for us to do something. Okay, so a faculty member, for example, can't go up to a student who's struggling and say, do you have this kind of issue?
No, I understand that.
Okay, the student must disclose it before we can do that, and they must disclose it before we can offer any of the assistance that's specifically allowed for students with various issues. And so, just like you said, Joe, it's a tightrope that you have to walk down to balance the student's privacy with the student's needs and the campus's ability to deliver the services that
thank
are
you. Just, thank you.
Yeah. So it's complicated. And I think we do a very good job, actually, but, you know, the reality is that when you've got more than 3,000 students, stuff is going to happen. Okay, just like in, you know, our student population is half the population of the village.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the village has a police force. The village has, you know, various other safety officers here, and that's because stuff happens. Okay, and so stuff will happen here to, you know, if it's pro rata, 50% of the extent that it happens in the village.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we have to have those resources here, just like the village does. So, Jim, do you want to talk about what's new in the unions?
There's not much new since the last time we talked. I was just thinking on this online, be sure that the union down in Albany headquarters is watching this really closely. SUNY Online, to make sure how it impacts the employees, the members. They're working with SUNY. They jumped on board a little late in my eyes. They knew it was coming, but they didn't do much start, and since we were like the spearhead, I knew all the stuff's going on. I'm like continuously poking. I'm like, "What are you guys doing any meetings yet?" And finally, they're 100% going after this now and watching just to make sure everything's done fairly. As you had mentioned, we had a lunch yesterday. I was shocked a little bit, but not really, that how we all agree on the same ideas, all of our union presidents in Canton, how family-like this college is.
We, yeah.
we're so different. It's just a policy. It's just a feeling here. It just happens. All the other colleges watch us and go, how do you do that? You know, it doesn't work that way with the unions and the other colleges. They're always battling and they're always doing these things that you consider typical union things. We just have a very good working relationship here and be able to talk and communicate back and forth without having to fight about it, which is wonderful, because I would hate the other way. I don't think I can stand it. Something we are going to do soon is a food drive from the unions. Thing we're going to, you know, this time of year, Thanksgiving's coming. There's a lot of poverty in the North Country. We're going to stash the pantry on campus and fill it up if we can, and so people have food over the holidays. And I have a meeting this afternoon to finalize the plans on that. So we'll soon, hopefully, it'll be a good turnout. People will donate, they usually do. And that's pretty much my report for today. I don't have much.
And again, just to tie kind of two thoughts together, with the SUNY Online push that we did, we went to the union before we ever joined SUNY Online to talk to them about what we thought would be necessary, right, for us to be able to play an important role in SUNY Online. And we asked them if they would agree to give us the flexibility, right, that we needed in order to do that, and you know, to give us the trust to do that. And I'm happy to say that they did. And you know, we've done our best to live up to that trust in making sure that our faculty's needs and academic freedom and you know, ultimately salaries are going to not be negatively impacted by what goes on. And we think that's just really important. And that's kind of how we do things here at SUNY. We talk to each other, and we try to do what's right. We're not always perfect, okay? But if there's a problem, we're always willing to hear it and look at it and try to do what's right. And that's what we do. Travis, you get to end the show and tell us what's new in public relations.
Okay. So Veer and Veer Courtney already mentioned the Extreme Summit down in Syracuse. I just wanted to hit a couple other little points from that event. Full hotel, by the way, downtown Syracuse Hotel. Phenomenal. We were going to tear that thing down at one point, but it was totally running it. So we were up in the main ballroom. Beautiful ceilings and portending. So one of the highlights from that event for me was to actually see the students on stage. We had six of our esports gamers there. And to see them, you know, be able to speak about their experiences and share that with the audience. And, you know, to think a couple years ago, they probably would have never had that kind of experience. So I think, you know, for a lot of them, that was part of one of the highlights of their, you know, their lives. So that was really exciting for me to see that. Marie mentioned something about academics and keeping that in mind in terms of esports. So Extreme is actually very interested in internships. So they have an East Coast operation in New Hampshire. So they're very interested in our cybersecurity students, potentially our IT students, and maybe our esports management students down the road, if, you know, if that works out. So so that's one of the key points there. Another thing that came out of this event was Turning Stone Casino had their manager of IT operations there at the event. And so he came over to talk to Kyle Brown a little bit, pick his brain about what they can do at Turning Stone to really build a nice arena there. So one of the holes they're trying to fill is the lack of boxing. They used to have lots of boxing events up at Turning Stone, and for some reason they lost out on that. So they see an opportunity here with esports. You know, can we build an esports arena and, you know, be the hub of upstate New York? And really, if they can pull it off, it would be the only one north of Madison Square Garden. So, and obviously as part of that, they would like to invite us there if all this works out, and we'd be one of the headliners at one of their first events. So Extreme actually built their entire network, so it's just kind of funny that all these things are coming together. So we'll see what happens down the road. I don't think it'll happen, you know, probably until like next fall, but they're very interested in esports. So. And then, as we also mentioned, the Channel 9 coverage out of Syracuse, and it's always nice to be mentioned with Syracuse University, especially when it says SUNY Canton is leading the way. And that just adds to the tally of the free advertising that we've received as a result of our partnership with Extreme and you know, just venturing into esports in general. you've heard me speak about SUNY Quad Awards in the past. Of course, we won 4 SUNY Quads. I'm on the list again, but one of the things we're looking at doing this time, this fall, is enter into some case awards. To my knowledge, the college hasn't entered into a case, at least in the last decade. Randy Zeminski used to say when he was director of PR and started here, he's like, I kind of want to get to the point where PR can actually submit a couple things to SUNY Quad. And then he said, you know, it's great that we're actually consistently submitting things to SUNY Quad now. And then he said, you know, when I took over, he's like, it's great that we're actually winning SUNY Quad Awards now. And now we're to the point where we're kind of winning every year, so I think it's that time to take that next step to submit to CASE, a national conference. We're starting with the regional submissions first, so we sent in 7 different applications, 1 for After Canton, our eSports issue, our eSports video, our admissions hopper piece, and our annual report from this past year. So a lot of things you've heard about before, but we're confident enough, hopefully, that we can maybe win at least one award. That would be really awesome for us, and then we'll see what happens down the road from that. I talked about Univision a little bit last time. We launched that campaign, so we're about 3 weeks into it. I can report we have about 2,500 new page views on our website, so that's nice. It's a little early to tell whether those will actually convert into students, but you know, we're hopeful maybe we'll get 1 or 2 students out of it. One other thing is our sports management program received accreditation from COSMA. So that press release will be going out in the next day or two. That just adds to the list of all our programs that are being accredited at very high levels. So that was one of Dr. Safran's goals when he came to campus, is to make sure every program is accredited to its fullest potential, right?
Yes, our business programs are now all accredited by IACB.
And then there's been a lot of talk about SUNY Online. They officially unveiled their marketing campaign. They're spending $5 million. They started this week. Getting ads as we speak from my staff that are just kind of happening upon them. So, you know, we'll see what happens. As Peggy mentioned, they got a little late start. They had some hang-ups with the funding and then also some hang-ups with OGS, trying to make it a reality. So, but they jumped over those hurdles, and hopefully we'll get some students this spring and definitely some students this fall.
Do you know who they're working with for their advertising?
I don't know. They're actually scheduling a webinar for this week to communicate with us. We've been a little in the dark marketing-wise about what we should be doing or shouldn't be doing to complement their efforts. We were told originally back in August that they were going to roll everything out and have this grand announcement soon in line, they have a press release, and they coordinate with us, and we'd all do everything simultaneously. And I think, really, honestly, they're just behind the eight ball, and they're just trying to get as much out as they can, you know, to get students for the spring. So,
$5 million may seem like a lot of money, but it's not.
Right.
Okay. And Southern New Hampshire University spends, what was that?
Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I was going to say like $200 million in advertising.
Arizona State spends about $70 million just on Google AdWords alone.
Wow. Yeah.
Not to even consider, you know, Facebook or Twitter. It's just crazy the money that's being thrown around.
Yeah. So $5 million is a start.
How do you broaden that program out? I mean, I don't see, I mean, it has to be here, but could there be satellite, SUNY Canton, eSports?
Oh, eSports?
eSports.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. But, you know, we're, you know, obviously more concerned about our academic programs.
Oh, absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
Being broadened out. That's what, you know, SUNY is advertising for SUNY
right.
Online. And, you know, an interesting thing, of course, is, you know, SUNY is hardly alone in doing this. There's basically not, there are not very many states that aren't doing this. So Arizona's doing it in Arizona State with a single institution. Maryland has done it with a single institution. They're probably the best known. Pennsylvania has done it with a single institution. Okay? SUNY is trying to do it with an entire system. That's something new under the sun. And that's why it's, you know, the building the plane as we fly it sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And so the real question is ultimately, you know, are they going to invest enough money in order to advertise it, in order to get the numbers, in order to, you know, be able to get the fiscal goals that they've set out to do. And, you know, so $5 million is a start.
Yeah.
Okay? And we're glad that they're doing that. But obviously, and everybody knows, they're going to need to ramp up the game. right, in order to compete with all the others. The other way to compete, of course, is in terms of quality. Okay, and that's something that we're looking very carefully at. Mm. Okay, because you know, we are, I think, argue honestly, we're number one in the country when it comes to involvement of online students in the total life of the college. Okay, and we think that's a selling point.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you want the full college experience, right, you can get it at SUNY Canton, and you really can't in other online programs. And if you just want to take your classes and, you know, that's it, you can do that here too.
Yeah.
Okay, because it doesn't cost anything extra, okay, in terms of our tuition or anything like that, in order to access those resources. So we are offering more and better. Okay, and we think that'll work.
And that is a way to broaden the esports too, is that we do have all online participants in it. So that does broaden it just past our brick and mortar campus.
I mean, you talk about esports, we talk about Paul Smith jumping on board and, you know, see Potsdam trying to start something up. The difference for us is that we have the academic programs that support esports. We have game design development. We have PMMD. You know, we have technological communications and soon esports management. They all fit together. So a lot of campuses will try to duplicate that, but they'll probably struggle with it. Mm.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Right, and you know, the other thing that we're doing, well, a lot of campuses, certainly the majority, do this as a fun activity, which it is.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, but we do this not just academically, but also as a central part of our athletics program. Our esports athletes are treated the same as our traditional athletes. And so we have got, you know, kind of the full college press on this that essentially nobody else does.
There's all kinds of training that goes on. There's a lot of backup, like, for esports. I couldn't believe I saw, you know, psychological evaluations.
Oh, yeah. Barrett's working on some stuff on that front, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Barrett, unfortunately, had to leave for an advising appointment, but she's got a really interesting research program that's centered around the experience of our esports athletes in comparison to regular or typical athletes, and finding that they experience many of the same psychological stressors that are associated with high level participation. It's really interesting.
And you know, the good thing is, this didn't come to us as afterthoughts. When we were planning the esports gig, right, we thought about all of these issues, and so the research thing was there before we launched.
Yeah.
Similarly, we're well aware that a lot of the people who have participated prior to our coming in esports, there's a lot of misogyny, okay, that occurs, and female esports participants have had a hard time of it, and online and so forth, and we purposefully took actions against that, having recruiting women to participate, having all women teams as well as mixed teams.
Okay.
We hosted the first all women's versus all women's team with a college competition with a college in Missouri, and so we continue to be in the forefront of trying to look forward here, so that and that's the challenge, of course, with these things is that you get something. Goes well for you, everybody else wants to get on board, your message starts getting diluted, okay, and so no matter how successful you are, you can't stand still, okay, you have to keep moving forward, and with online, that's where we are. We are continuously moving forward in all aspects of online and all aspects of esports, because we want to maintain our lead and have people realize, if you're serious about this, SUNY Canton is the best place for you. And with that, Ronnie Neal, we are done.
Okay, any other questions? I appreciate your attending the meeting today. As far as the College Council appointments are concerned, my term has expired now, so that makes us all holdovers. I don't feel bad about it.
Yeah,
and along with a number of other campuses. I'm aware of a couple campuses that have approached their locally elected state senator or assembly person,
but we don't have that option here, obviously. Talk to the governor about getting on board, getting us reappointed, so it's just not an option. I think I mentioned to you before that in the future, if we don't have a quorum, knowing ahead of time we don't have a quorum, we will not have a meeting. Simple as that.
Have we, Ron, have we looked into having people on the phone to get our quorum? We do that, you know, for our foundation meetings. It's being done quite a bit. And, you know, even for bank meetings, we do it for that as well.
I think with our, you know, we could look at that in the future. But, for example, if Roger had planned to come be here today and he had another really important meeting because he's involved with it, his business with with the trains coming in the United States and that being sold, so I'm sure it's something important like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So he wouldn't be able to attend, our student representative, that I don't know. But we're down to so slim number that we're, it's pretty, pretty tough.
If one person can't come, we're done.
Pretty much. A lot of times what's happening, I know with the bank board I'm on, is they're off somewhere else, you know, they're in Florida, or they're doing something.
We could think about that with Marie being in Saratoga soon, right?
Marie's going pretty soon, actually.
Marie's going to have surgery in December. I'm going to get a new knee. Be faster than the turtle I've been for the last
year. Bionic
woman. I'm hoping that I won't miss a meeting, but I don't know.
Understandable.
Is there any way to prod the powers that be? I guess
it's been
not.
Done.
I mean, we've done this before. But
just
no
been done. And I subscribe to the Adirondack Explorer. I don't know if anyone know that. And the APA board is the same. There's like three or four that are holdovers.
I know.
It's actually a problem system-wide.
It is.
The only thing that seems to get the wheels moving is a presidential search. And I don't think that that's a thing that we hope to engage in anytime soon. So,
thank you.
But I just thought maybe if we don't hold a number of meetings and don't meet the requirement of the law, and we don't approve the president's report, well, maybe then someone will have to listen.
Well,
I hate
that's
that.
One way to do it, but, you know, certainly something that we did at a previous campus, in fact, more than one, okay, is, you know, like many boards, we operated under Robert's Rules of Order. Here we may operate under some kind of SUNY rules that I'm less familiar with. But in Robert's Rules of Order, if there's a quorum, right, unless somebody actually calls the quorum, you can proceed with business. And so one could, you know, if something important was being discussed by which you would insist that there would be a quorum, somebody would call the quorum, and thus you couldn't do that, and that's entirely appropriate. But for routine work, right, it would often be the case that the business would proceed, nobody would call the quorum, and thus just, you know, reports could be acknowledged.
I remember a number of years, the first time I was chairman, probably 20 years ago, and we had that same issue, and I remember the guy named Samuel Levine, who was counsel for the, and he specifically said that we could not do it.
Okay, that may be because of the
story. I don't know if anything has changed since then. Yeah. It's a problem. Mm-hmm. It's just as simple. Look, I'm a supporter of the governor, I'll tell you that. But he's just one of those people that just is hands on everything. He just doesn't sign off on anything or delegate to anyone to speak of. So.
It actually gives me a bad taste in my mouth because that inattention seems to me to convey the idea that we have little importance. And yet, we are supposedly essential in some ways. We hope to, you know, advise.
Right.
in consent or whatever.
Well, Marie, you're very important to us.
No, I understand.
No,
but
I'm
very
serious about this. This is important to us.
It just, but that, it, this is, this board is not the only one, as you said. But on others, that same thing happened.
Yes.
Very inefficient.
Yeah, we think, you know, it's important to have some folks from the outside who have got some stature looking at what we do and, you know, letting us know if we're getting off the path and asking appropriate questions, right, just to make sure that, you know, we're not just, you know, kind of looking at ourselves and saying how wonderful we are, okay? We need to have, you know, some objective folks, right, who know what they're talking about looking at what we do. And so, you know, that's an important way for us to be honest and straightforward and to do what we, do what our responsibilities say. And so it's really important. I'm sorry that, you know, the governor hasn't found the time to appoint other people and so forth and to let some folks who have, you know, been on here forever, okay, have a little bit of freedom. We're very glad that you've stuck with us, okay, certainly. And we hope that even after he appoints additional people that you'll continue to do so.
Yeah.
Because I personally, you know, and I know I'm speaking for everybody else, you know, I love seeing you guys.
Well,
okay, and I find these meetings to be very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. We're very lucky to have Ron still in there helping us.
That's for sure.
God, I'm waiting for someone to replace him.
You're irreplaceable.
Make an arena, I guess.
remember the last meeting we had, there was a, somebody had their cell phone on, and there was music, and I thought God was calling me. I didn't know for sure, but anyway.
This is kind of off the side a little bit, but you knew Bruce Dart.
Yes.
I know where he taught here, but you know Bruce or not, but he's retired about 10 years ago. But real big guy. But every time a vacancy come up for after Dr. Kennedy left, when there were interim presidents and all that stuff, Bruce volunteered every time to come over and fill it. And then when he had a new search for the president, he said, "I'm in the running, you know." So maybe we get Bruce to be chairman. But of course, he'd have to be appointed. That's not going to happen. So, well, anyway, we'll keep at it and see what happens. And I want to thank Debbie for filling in for Michaela today.
Thanks,
Michaela apparently was on like three different searches. So it was difficult for her to be here today. But I want to thank you all for coming today. Appreciate your time and your input at every meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.